The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Penn State football's back, and Great Match Generator's back. So welcome to Great Match Generator here. Beast Mike and Greg are both Penn State alum, as we are here to talk about three great matches, because the fourth one, I couldn't find anywhere. I actually could find it, but I would have to get a DVD file and then convert into a MP4, and it would be too much work for my computer setup right now. So we're going to do it another week. I put it back in the generator. So it will come up again. But if you were looking forward to our thoughts on the one count, 8-woman tag, unfortunately this week wasn't destined to line up with us. But I'm here with Beast Mike and Greg. How you guys doing?
I'm doing pretty good. Like D Cooks is saying, we back on Saturday afternoon at 3:30. They will be in Bloomington. They'll be playing the Indiana Hoosiers this week. Thanks to the chaos and the mayhem that happened beforehand, Penn State will be ranked 8th in the country going into the game. Unfortunately, Greg, and I know you know this too, I'm sure, Journey Brown will not be playing in the game. He's got a little bit of an illness situation that he has to deal with. But I have faith in Noah Kane and the Long Boys. I think the Long Boys will be able to still be productive even without the best one of them all in Journey.
I'm just scratching my chin right now, because where's Notre Dame ranked right now?
Notre Dame is, I believe, 3rd.
Yeah, buddy.
Third. Yep. I'm just dancing. Georgia got housed by Alabama. Georgia got handled by Alabama. Notre Dame was able to slide into the number 3 spot without playing. Well, actually, I did play on Saturday and barely beat Florida State. But you guys are 3rd in the country right now, which is setting up
Louisville. Louisville, unfortunately.
It's setting up for an ultra showdown between you guys and Clemson in a couple weeks at South Bend. I'm anticipating College Game Day will be there. Matter of fact, it's November 7th. So, yeah, you guys got
the week after Halloween.
You guys got 2 weeks to prepare. You got 2 weeks to get through, and then you get Notre Dame on November 7th. And that will likely, I mean, I expect both teams to probably run it back in Charlotte for the ACC title. But this is round one of, I think, a 2-round series between you guys and Clemson.
Yes. But, Greg, what were you going
to? You guys pretty much covered it. I'm excited for Penn State football to come back. Yeah, Journey Brown, big loss. He was kind of a dark horse Heisman guy, but if there's one position we can afford to lose somebody, it's running back. So,
Devin Ford, Noah Kane. I actually had a class with Devin Ford last year. He's a good dude. He's a good guy. Some of the players over the last couple years while I was up there, good people they are. And I think they're going to be – this looks like a very good team. Even without Micah and Journey, I think this is still going to be a very good team. This is a really good defense. I think the running game is going to be just fine. Be coming back.
Yeah, definitely a really good. We're going to be in the running for a lot of stuff. As for Notre Dame, I don't trust any of those rankings until the Big Ten and Pac-12 play.
That's a good point. I think it's a very, very good point. Once we start on Saturday, and then 2 weeks later the Big 12 will start, the Pac-12 will start. I think that's a very fair point.
The Big 12 has been horrendous, though. let's just call it as it is.
Oklahoma State's the only hope for that conference. That's the one hope standing for the Big 12. OU's lost twice. Texas lost twice. Like, it's bad for that conference, except for Chuba Hubbard and his crew. They're going to have to survive the rest of the way through to have a shot.
But enough college football talk. Let's talk some shoot style and some classic 80s wrestling here. Overall, what were your impressions this week as we watched some shoot style and some 80s wrestling? The matches were Takeda and Alexander Otsuka from 11-5-97, Greg Valentine and Bob Backlund from 4-23-84, and Nick Bockwinkel versus Kurt Hennig from 5-2-87. Were there any overall themes?
I like the Japanese match the best of the three. I think the speed and the fluidity of that match I thought was, to me, I like how entertaining that was. I just like the style, like how quick the counters were and the submissions were on early on. Especially that transition into that with like a knee bar slash heel hook type of submission. That was so smooth. I love that. Then we got physical with the suplexes in it, and those clothes arms were really, really stiff. I was a fan of that match most of all.
Let's talk about Ikeda Otsuka first. I really enjoyed this match. This was my favorite shoot style match we have delved into so far. Because they were so active in their submissions and in the striking game. There was even a flip dive that was believable in the match.
Definitely. Yeah, definitely.
What were your thoughts, Greg?
So first of all, just to make sure, because again, everything was in Japanese, Daisuke was the guy in the black trunks?
Yes. Okay. SK Ikeda was in the black trunks and Otsuka was in the blue trunks.
I thought this was
blue singlet.
I thought it was a really, really interesting match to watch because, especially early on, there was virtually no crowd noise.
Mm-hmm.
And just the way it was kind of shot, it really looked like I was watching an Olympic amateur style wrestling match.
Yes.
It did feel like that. Yeah, it did. Yeah, there's really no crowd noise until, like, they had an exchange, and then they separate, and the crowd would kind of give their applause, and then they would go back in, and the crowd would go back silent. And yeah, that was something to notice.
And I'm not saying it was – because they were obviously, like, so into it, they were just kind of, like, enthralled, but, like, it was very quiet. It was like watching a real, like, sport, not, like, an entertainment sport, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But then I was immediately taken away from amateur wrestling into kickboxing when I saw Daisuke's kicks. Oh my god.
Daisuke Ikeda's kicks are freaking incredible.
He looked like a straight up kickboxer, and I was really impressed.
Those kicks hit home, those clotheslines Daisuke threw, they hit home. Like you can hear the clotheslines hit the chest. And how hard and how stiff those clotheslines were.
The stomps, too. The stomps that Ikeda was hitting later in the match were really stiff, too. It was definitely a striker-get-grappler match.
Right.
Yeah. And then I thought it was really interesting. About halfway through, I think it was, Otsuka starts working on the leg to try and take away those kicks. And that, he had a thick dragon screw.
Yeah, that's what I was saying before. That transitioned into the dragon screw into what looked like a knee bar or a heel hook, because he definitely didn't have the heel hook, didn't he?
Yeah.
That was really, really nice.
I thought Otsuka wouldn't stay down. I thought the theme of the match was Otsuka not wanting to stay down.
Pretty much.
And, like, him, like, trying to not stay down. I really liked the lariat into the armbar counter.
Yep.
Later on in the match, and then it led to the suplexes, the drop kick, and then the last two suplexes were vicious.
Yes.
I'll say
that one does good the match.
Better than probably anybody I've seen in a long time.
Those dragon suplexes were vicious.
Ooh, high and tight in the back of the head. Yeah, they did not miss.
And I felt like overall sense of urgency, very urgent.
Yes.
And this is a point I've been hitting on since we've been on this air. I like sense of urgency. I like wrestlers going after things. I like, and I thought that was the theme in these three matches as well. Where wrestlers were very urgent to attack, especially in this match. This was my favorite match of the three, but all three were, and we'll get to it later, very urgent in how they, it felt like a struggle.
I would say so. I think I would say so. I would agree with that.
Yeah, definitely, especially this one. I think you said earlier it felt like the theme was Otsuka, like, just not giving up. And especially at the end, he was on spaghetti legs, and I just, like he wouldn't give up. You're right. He just kept getting back up. And I actually at one point was asking myself, is this a last man standing match? Because he
that's
was that
like.
Get back.
Yeah, it sort of was. And it sort of was because those rules are so different than the traditional wrestling rules, but at the same time, he got the three count. And they mix in those shoot style and pro wrestling rules so well. So, 4.5 stars. This was really good.
I'll give it the same rating. I enjoyed how different this match was. It went from the submission style to the combat style to the grapples. I enjoyed how different this match was and how it evolved. So, yeah, I think 4.5 is a good rating.
Greg?
I'll go just a little bit lower because I did like the other matches a little bit more. So I'll go 4.25.
Okay. 4.25. Oh, yeah. I liked all three of these matches. I gave each of these matches 4.5 stars. So I thought, let's go to Valentine and Backlund. So this to me, I wrote some notes before the match even started. I wrote down the date, 4/23/84. Hogan won the belt 1/23/84.
Okay.
So this was 3 months after Hogan won the belt.
Uh-huh.
This match is such a culture shock to what WWF would become. You know, this is very gritty, very almost dirty how the wrestling was in this match compared to how clean, polished everything would be in like 85, 86, 87.
Mm-hmm. This was honestly my favorite match, I think, because, okay. Well, so the first thing is going in, when I was really young in like elementary school, I always remember my friends talking about this wrestler who had the cross-faced chicken wing and nobody could get out of it. And he had this whole challenge, but I never picked up on who the wrestler was until honestly, like 2 years ago. It dawned on me that was Bob Backlund. And so, but I'd never really seen any of his matches. And I feel like he was the man of his era.
But yes.
About in the same terms as San Martino, Hogan, Austin, Cena, as being.
No, he's not.
The big guys. And so it was really so I've never seen one of his matches, and I was excited to see what all the hype was about, and he pulled me in immediately. There was something about him that I really liked this match.
I really liked this match too, and I thought he had a certain resiliency about him that was very good.
Yes.
His selling was very good. So was Valentine. Valentine was really good in this match too. But Backlund was the star. Backlund was the star of the show, but Valentine was really good here too.
That's what I wrote down, is I have not seen selling like this in probably ever. This was amazing.
It is quite a thing how underrated I would say Greg Valentine is. Like you mentioned, all those dudes in the mid to late 80s of Hogan and obviously Backlund we talk about, and then you got Sheik in there, you got Slaughter in there, you got Savage in there, you got Warrior in there, you got all these heavyweight stars, and then you got Greg Valentine, who seems like one of those incredibly underrated guys who really did his thing and really handled business in that time period. And I'm glad he got a chance to shine here in a good match like this.
Yeah, and he was also a very good brawler. He was also in that very famous dog collar match with Roddy Piper in NWA in 83. And they brought him in 80, and WWF brought him in 84 as part of the expansion. And Greg Valentine is the perfect example of a good veteran hand. He will sell his ass off. He will do everything he can to get the baby face over. And wrestling needs more people like that. Wrestling needs more people who just because I think the problem with today's wrestling is everybody's shooting for the top, but they don't know how to be satisfied with just being a good solid veteran hand. Like Scorpio Sky is the perfect example of a Greg Valentine.
Okay.
Of the era. Like Scorpio Sky is like good solid veteran hand in AEW.
I would say Cesaro would be WWE's equivalent to this. Of a guy who is, we all think he can make it to the top area, but he just puts on overall really, really good matches. And it's just an overall very good piece who can wrestle with pretty much every kind of style and every kind of opponent. So I would argue in WWE's case it would be Cesaro.
Right. But Backlund, there was a sense of urgency in this match. It was a different kind of sense of urgency than the Otsuka-Ikeda match, obviously. And these next two matches are very similar in how they were worked, because I think both these matches are masterclasses in how to sell.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, Greg?
I was just going to say, I love Captain Lou Albano, and it was great seeing him.
That was good. Yeah, that was definitely
good. Yeah, Lou Albano was fantastic. It was fantastic seeing him. Fantastic seeing him in this role. The Valentine promo was very good at the start.
The whole thing felt like a big time boxing match with the ring announcer and everything.
Yes.
And have
that
you,
whole
have
evening you, though, not just what, that match, the matches beforehand with Slaughter and Sheik, and the first match that was featured in the Garden that night. It felt like a boxing environment. The New York State Athletic Commission, like the whole deal.
Yeah, I don't think I've ever heard managers announced before either.
Not in this fashion. And that's what WWF did so well back in the day. Back in like the late 70s, early 80s. They made it feel like this almost sport like, but you still had wacky characters.
Right.
Yeah.
There was still an aesthetic to it.
Yeah, they mentioned the ref, and the ref got booed, got a little bit of heat from the Garden crowd. Like you mentioned, Finkel got booed a little bit. Like it was, it had that kind of presentation. It was kind of a hybrid And yeah, like what you said, like what it used to be.
Yeah, because this was as Vince was trying to. Vince didn't even like this.
Well, you know. They were shooting. I mean, I did a little bit of wrestling as a kid, like legit, like amateur wrestling. And
okay.
I can tell you what Backlund was doing, the whole getting on all fours, the way he was shooting for the leg, like that mm-hmm. was all legit. This looked like you were watching a wrestling match, like an
like
amateur.
Legion wrestling, like Legion or, yeah, like Legion or Olympic wrestling, yeah.
Yeah, they were putting on holds, and like you guys have been saying, like that they were selling the simplest things as if they were so painful, and the commentary was great too. They were putting over like, yes. Oh, that's such a painful hold. Oh, he's gonna go for this, and that really tears at the ankle or something like.
And not screaming gibberish at you. Right. That was so refreshing.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
And like useless gibberish at you. You know? And I think commentary, even AEW does it better than WWE, but both commentaries just fail at
they're trying to trying, oversell. They try to over like oversell. Over to it.
Yes. So, this stars. This was excellent. The finish was a little anticlimactic. With the figure four on, he had the figure four, but he had to let go, and then he was arguing with the ref. So Backlund took advantage of it. But I'm not gonna knock it too much, you know. This was really good.
I wasn't into this as much as the Japanese match we just discussed, but I gave it 4.25. But I thought it was still pretty entertaining. I did wish the crowd was into this a little bit more compared to the Slaughter Sheik match that happened earlier on in that show. But I thought it was a pretty good match overall. I thought it was pretty good overall.
Yeah.
I'm actually giving this 5 stars. I love this. This is my favorite of the matches. I get what you're saying about the crowd. I liked at the very beginning, there was like a single sign that said, I think it said Backlund, you're our champ or something like that.
Yeah.
And it was the wrong your, and I was just like, oh man, even back then. Right. I really, really like this. I actually loved the ending. We got to see that classic spot where Greg, grabs the ropes and Backlund pulls him and like slams him down. But I thought this was a wonderful way of using the surprise roll-up that we don't really see in the modern day. We'll see a million surprise roll-ups on Raw, but they're all just stupid. I liked how there was a bunch of near falls, and then almost out of desperation, Backlund does the surprise roll-up. And it gave the heel a chance to, you know, get heat afterwards. Like, oh, man, I lost, you know, by not cheating, but like.
You lost by almost sheer luck.
Yeah. And that gave a chance to go after the ref and cause a whole kerfuffle, which, you know, that's sports entertainment at that point. But the match itself was just I really like it for its shoot style. That was really, really cool.
Yeah. Nick Bockwinkel versus Kurt Hennig. A masterclass.
Yes.
This was a masterclass on selling, on technique, on the simple things. This was very simplistic, yet very, very good. Very good. Very solid.
Yeah, I felt like you could get into this match pretty much from the word go. Just because of the styles that both guys have, and how easy and how Yeah, how easy and how simplistic they make things. Like they could, they were fluid. Both guys were incredibly fluid. Obviously, Kurhanic always was. Both guys were able to kind of sold their wares and make it and have some strategy involved here. I dropkick is always awesome. It was a very solid, very productive match that really. It didn't really waste too much time. There really wasn't there too much waste.
No, this felt like a struggle too. Felt like a struggle. This felt like a fight. The crowd was very invested in it.
Yes, they were.
This was the rematch from the 11/21/86 match, which was a Broadway. So they were determined to see who was the better man. Which 11/21/86 is gonna be on this show because it's a great match, and it will be on the generator. But overall, this was really good. It's just really solid. Greg, what were your thoughts?
So going in, I've really only ever experienced 90s Kurt Hennig. And by the way, I gotta say it right. It's Hennig, not Hennig.
Hennig.
Yeah, Hennig. Yeah.
Hennig.
It's almost one of those Mandela effects. But it was really interesting to see him like super young in his career.
True. Whereas, not the charisma. That's true. I didn't notice the charisma in this match as much.
Yeah, and he just flew around a little more fluidly than he did in his later years. I wasn't really familiar with Bockwinkel other than his name, but he looks like he was just picked right out of, I don't know, like the 1940s or something, with that leather in and that bleach blonde curls. It looks like from the Gorgeous George era.
Yeah.
And then just plopped into the late 80s. It took me a minute to get into just because I felt like I needed that Larry Zbyszko backstory to really understand this. But then once like he started getting involved and I kind of figured it all out with the context, I really got into this one too.
Yeah, like Zbyszko probably wanted Hennig to win, probably because he was the younger guy. He was afraid of Bockwinkel, and Bockwinkel's obviously the better wrestler because Bockwinkel's more accomplished than Hennig. Mm-hmm. So, logistically, it worked. And then, so he gives Hennig the roll of coins, and after a nice sequence of near falls, including an insane sunset flip, which the height that Hennig gets on like sunset flips and drop kicks are amazing.
Yes.
Height. It's like Okada height.
I think that's a fair comparison. I think it's a very fair comparison.
With the height of the dropkick. Technique-wise, it was very solid. It was a 4.5-star match that really you don't have much to say about because everything was just solid.
Everything did flow really, really well. I guess I didn't like it better. I'm on the 4.25, 4.5 stick for it. I'll go 4.25 for it. But I thought everything flowed really, really well with this match.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like. What are your thoughts, Greg?
I was gonna say yeah, 4.5. It was definitely a good like kind of shoot style match, like you said, very similar to the Backlund match. I really got into the ending just because I kind of wish we would see this in the modern day. Can you imagine if we were like reviewing tape and like a commissioner was like reviewing stuff after a match and holding a belt? Like,
the ending, like this was an end of a pay-per-view too. And at like, this was the last 10 minutes of a pay-per-view, like the whole controversy and like everything like that. Like people don't have the attention span for this anyway. I'm like, but this is great storytelling though.
He says it's gonna take us a week to review the tape, and I was just like, you told somebody in 2020 that it would take you a week to review a tape for a sporting match. Like
that would be wild, right? That would be wild.
All over a foreign object, which, by the way, is Sean Spears' entire gimmick right now in AEW, and they're not reviewing tapes for his matches.
No, they ain't. But we look at this and we see elements that are missing in modern wrestling that we could essentially put in modern wrestling.
Yeah.
Whether it is WWE or AEW, I just think I've gotten so sick. I thought Raw was my breaking point this week. Hearing John,
they did Retribution so dirty. they did them so dirty. That was dirty what they did to them.
And it wasn't even just Retribution. Matt Riddle, whether you like him or not, or whether he did what he, I don't know, but the goal of wrestling is to build future stars.
Right.
And the goal of wrestling is to put people over.
Honestly, I think the guy that got put over was not AJ, but the dude on the outside.
Yeah.
Right. The outside got put over to me, not Riddle or AJ. He was the guy that really stood out in that whole situation.
Yeah, I think that's a perfect example of losing does not mean burial, because I looked it up and I think Matt Riddle's 9-2 on the main roster. So like, it's not like losing all the time. And
Riddle's going to be fine.
Yeah, that Riddle's going to be fine.
Giant over.
Yeah, getting the giant over.
Right.
Yeah. But Retribution totally got buried. That was.
And then the phony, like the kind of promo that Ali did, like where he revealed he was the hacker, which we probably should have seen. Most of us probably knew, but the whole thing was just done so rushed and so badly done, just because it got Fiend and Alexa, and they're starting to really, they're hitting a real stride, I think.
Yep.
I think it was just so badly done the way they did Retribution on Raw.
I like Ali. I like that they made him the leader, and I thought it was actually a pretty good promo, but it was all undermined by getting whooped twice at the start of the show. And once single-handedly,
and then once by the Hurt, and once by effectively Lashley. So 100%. That's my problem. That was my problem with it. They should have revealed that Ali was the guy, but I think they should have did it like next week, or like have some more hacker stuff happen.
When they advertised it.
Right, exactly. Like, they advertised like they did right before WrestleMania, which, like, the stuff they did when they first did it, I thought was really good. I thought it was a good act. But, again, it seems, like I said at the start of this with Retribution, it could be a good group, but at least make it have a point. So far, you're shooting your bullets, but they're all blanks. You're not bringing a point to this.
But we're getting Jon Moxley versus Eddie Kingston as a pay-per-view title match, and that's going to be so believable.
Yes.
Who would have thought? Who would? This is why AEW is so superior. Would anybody have thought Eddie Kingston would be getting a pay-per-view title shot 6 months ago?
No.
He wasn't even in the company 6 months ago.
But that's going to be incredibly fit. That's going to be a fight. That's going to be a straight up fight. That screams straight up fight.
I'm excited for everything with AEW. They have just pulled me in so much with everything they do.
They got some stuff. Yeah, they got some good stuff going. I gotta say, they got some good stuff going on. They really do.
Like they're gonna do MJF Jericho, which is gonna be a huge match. Bucks FTR. FTR has a little bit hasn't performed as well as I would like them to, but still, Bucks FTR.
I don't think they've had the chance to have a signature match. I don't think they've had the chance to have a signature match like they did when they were the Revival. I think that's the thing that they're looking for, and then once they get it, I think then that's they hit their stride, their true AEW stride.
You had the chance with Omega and Paige, and you sort of failed with Kenny Omega. So right. I'm a little wary there, but the Young Bucks are a great worker. So people are more divisive.
It seems like they've been building that match for like 3 years. What was the conversation for like 3 or 4 years? Like who's the best team in the world? Was it Bucks or Revival? That match for like 3 years. Like even like the Bucks. And the Behind the Elite stuff before the Revival came, before they were in the same company, where they were all right. Like kind of clapping the Revival time and time again on social media.
Right.
So I think this has been building for like 3 years, and I think they're gonna have that signature match for FTR.
Right. So it's gonna be really good. And then the G1 was really good. Kota Ibushi wins it for the second year in a row, and really is striding into Wrestle Kingdom as there's going to be some Bullet Club fractioning. Osprey's getting his new stable. This is a completely new era of New Japan. So the Okada era is over. And Okada's still in the company. That's freaking funny to me.
Maybe it's just Okada passing the torch, perhaps. That's kind of what it sounds like to me. Like he doesn't need to be the champion anymore to be the best guy in the world type of dude. That's what that sounds like. Where Okada's gonna like spend some time, like okay, he's gonna put over. He may put over some guys and kind of say, "Oh, I beat Okada. That's my signature win." Like where Okada's gonna put on some good matches, but I think for a while he no longer has to be the champion. And
right,
I think he will still be regarded as the best wrestler in the world by a whole lot of people.
Right, because Ospreay did beat him on the last night with help. And they set up the story, and it's gonna be very interesting to see what they do with Okada and Ospreay for Wrestle Kingdom. But plugs, plug.
Twitter.com/BeastMike is where you can find me. I will naturally be tweeting about the various things that will happen. Obviously, NFL tomorrow night, so with Eagles and Giants in this area, this is kind of big.
Oh, God. Don't even get me started.
Naturally, I will be tweeting.
That will be a conversation. That will be a conversation for off the air.
Yeah. I will certainly be tweeting. I have been tweeting about Tua Tagovailoa. People know me. I am a Dolphins fan, so Tua getting the start is gonna be his time after the bye. Miami. I think that was the plan all along. Was for Tua to get the job after the Dolphins bye. The thing that kind of roughed up the plans a little bit was the bye was week 7 as opposed to 11. But I think this was the plan all along. Be tweeting about Penn State and their game in Indiana on Saturday, and if there is a game 5, I will be there. I'll be in DC on Sunday for the World Series.
Greg.
Yeah. You can catch me over on Twitter at PSUOptimus. yeah, I'm probably gonna be tweeting about Penn State as well. My other projects are. on YouTube and Instagram. You can see me at Wrestling Optimus. And yeah, I'm doing a lot of reviews over there. I'm going to be doing predictions for Hell in a Cell and a review of that. And I'm currently, by the way, building a custom stage for my action figures for AEW. And it's going to have lights and sounds and a video screen and everything. So you can see all my progress over on Instagram as I build that thing.
I've seen it. I've seen this progress. I live 10 minutes from Greg, so... Okay. So I've been over his house, so I've seen it in person, and it's going real well.
Nice.
So Twitter, you know what I'm tweeting about. Notre Dame football, wrestling, and various other things. It's basically it for Great Match Generator this week. For next time on Great Match Generator, we go into the 90s for New Japan Pro Wrestling and do Tatsumi Fujinami versus Great Muta. Then we have a 5-on-5 elimination match as Antonio Inoki, Yoshiaki Fujiwara, Seki Sakaguchi, Kentaro Hoshino, and Keiji Muto face off against Tatsumi Fujinami, Riki Choshu, Akira Maeda, Kengo Kimura, and Super Strong Machine from 1987. It's a 5-on-5 elimination match, and those New Japan elimination matches are always fun. Billy Robinson versus Giant Baba from 7/24/86. And then Bob Backlund. We go see our friend Bob Backlund again versus Sergeant Slaughter this time from 3/21/81. So I hope you can join us next time for Great Match Generator. I'm your host, DJ Mike and Greg Brown. Thank you for listening.